Good evening. Thank you for coming out and welcome to River Styx at Duff's. Before we start tonight in our purely poetry program, I'd like to relay some exciting news about developments in the works to bring back free radio to St. Louis. River Styx began as an organization, if we use that term loosely, about 15 years ago with a radio program on the old KDNA station in St. Louis. For those of you who were around then, you know that KDNA was run as a radically different form of radio that's only, I think, best been described by the phrase free-form radio. Programming flowed into other programming, music, odd combinations of music. Anything could happen on KDNA, and most of the programming was developed by people and groups in the community. The station was sold in 1972, which led River Styx to move into other media, including this one. Over those intervening years, a group called Double Helix Corporation has remained together as a media organization, teaching various media courses in the St. Louis metropolitan area and laying a foundation to come back on the air with a radio station and down the road to have a community access television station. Where they are today, and some of you may have seen an article about 3 months ago in the Riverfront Times, which projected that about this time to watch out for 88.1, as the new station will be called. But the new station has gone ahead clearing all of the legal hurdles and construction hurdles and is 90% toward the way of coming on the air. They will be on the air some point this summer, and we expect to be on the air with River Styx Radio sometime in the fall, or perhaps even earlier. So I'd like you to be aware of that and listening, and also to call your attention to an event called Radio Night at the Casa Loma, this Sunday, March 22nd, which is going to be a benefit for 88.1. Casa Loma Ballroom, which is where it will be held, is at 3354 Iowa. It's an old dance hall, wonderful looking place. And the tickets for that event are $6. There will be food and drink available there. And a number of St. Louis groups, including the Soulard Blues Band, Jasmine, The Preachers, Decent Exposure, and Philip Crawford will be there. So there's going to be good entertainment, but really when you get involved with 88.1 radio and freeform listener-sponsored radio, it's the people that make whatever happens happen. So, I mean, at this event, I expect what will really be the attraction is everyone who's there and building and networking toward having a True People station in St. Louis. So we look forward to that day, and there are notices about the benefit that will be available over at the desk. They're out scattered through the audience. And this gentleman over here, Mr. Mouse with the Mickey Mouse shirt, Paul Newenkirk, has tickets available and can be approached and persuaded to part with some for a price. And can also answer any questions you might have or discuss with you what you would like about the station. So keep your ears open. There's going to be a lot happening in the next few months regarding 88.1. Well, now to tonight's purely poetry program. Two excellent poets here tonight, Alice Brand, who's a St. Louisan, known to many of you, and a visitor to St. Louis from Santa Fe, New Mexico, very fine poet and translator, Arthur Z. We're going to start off with a reading by Alice Brand, who, for those of you who don't know Alice, she is a faculty member in the continuing education program at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. She has taught many poetry writing classes in the St. Louis area, both at a university and in private kinds of situations. She's won numerous prizes for her poetry, including prizes from the St. Louis Writers Guild, the Wednesday Club at St. Louis, and the Missouri and the Missouri Writers Guild. She's published in a number of periodicals. Among her most prestigious publications, of course, are River Styx and the New York Times. And she has a fine book out as of 1983 called As It Happens. So please lend your ears and put your hands together for Alice Brand.
I'm glad to be here. I think you can all hear me, and I'll probably get louder as it goes on. That's the way the pieces work. Let me tell you a little bit about what I'm going to be reading. I'm not reading from the published book. I am going to read from a new manuscript that I've worked on. And let me share with you a little bit of information so you'll know what to expect and understand the way the poems are working. There are, I guess over the last 3 years, and this builds from that, the themes that I still am concerned about are very evident. Female themes and some social and political themes and some ethnic themes. And that kind of has educated me, made me very sensitive to more sensitive than ever before. I guess poetry does that to you. But because that material tends to be perhaps a little more intellectual, maybe even historical, in between those, I also have tried to experiment with different forms and different ideas, kind of one-shot things. So I've interspersed the serious material with maybe serious, but in other ways. I think you'll recognize the difference. And I will sip water a lot. The first meeting of Missouri and New York. You tell me you know me. You remember the place, the year. You have seen my work. You know my sister, my city, my street, my maiden name. You recall my face and hair. You tell me that you will share, reach, give, bring, that you plan on calling or writing or visiting. We will get together in Chicago, maybe Des Moines. Do I ever get to Muncie or Dubuque? You will change in due time. You will learn not to ask so many questions. You will surround yourself with people who make you feel good. You will learn not to wave freely or stop and talk. You will reserve your smile for those of certain status. You will pass by friends you haven't seen for a long time, cross the street not to meet them. Your door will close softly as they walk by. You will stay in small, secret groups and nod only to special people. You will touch their shoulders and wear their words and come to see the rest of us out of their eyes in due time. This poem is, I had the occasion, my husband and I, to be in Australia, and that I've written many, many poems about Australia, but the themes, it really doesn't matter where that is. And it's called Holding a Necklace. In my thoughts, my daughters are dancing in the Pacific for the first time. A puppet show, paper dolls, and dawn. What better place than at the sea? The reef flat and the slopes precious with their coral. Again, life and death get mixed up. Something so perishable, coral grows a few inches a year. The K's are silver money penny. Their coves ruffle back and forth, so fragile when we walk this morning side of Cairns. The Maori take their sounds from birds and rushing water, the scarring of the Aboriginals, the tattoos of the Maori. We can put a frame around almost anything. Some say that Australia is an empty bowl, harsh and bankrupt. So far as I can tell, wooden containers do important things for carrying, for chopping, for cradling. Objects of daily use form an art of intuition and love. It is a risky business, this food chain. Stray dogs lie in yards or along highways and chase us into stores. The crown of thorn starfish turns itself inside out to cover its prey. Sharks breed in inland waters and lurk where the sea is flat. Pirates and gypsies to learn what candy strangers lure our children with. But I am the windward side. I am the stronger house. I am the granite peak of a mountain that breaks off from the mainland. I send down curtains of roots like jungle vines. Still, the barrier reef is not impervious. Still, the coral finds its way. I am reminded that all it takes is four brush strokes to draw the human figure. My daughters, remarkable how their currents sweep past me. How they negotiate the undertow, no one capsized, no casualties, brave and cruel, for no longer letting me take care of them. And this is an interlude, very different. It's called Words. Could you look at this for a minute? I know you're thinking, what now? I just gave you a minute. I just need a second of your time. You know, I don't have all day. Just give me 5 minutes of your undivided. See, I have this picture of me, and I don't know which picture is more me. You know what I mean? Should I look waxy and polished like a seashell? Should I look rural gothic or the backwood of women waiting for food? Or should I have my high school picture updated when I was geometric in front stoop? Or should I look Berkeley, harlequin hair on one side, the other side velvet, imbalanced, turned up collar tough, hair like leaves sweeping across the street? Or hair the slope of a hum? Do I wear a turtleneck sweater or a white blouse? Should one side of me be in shadow so that they know only part of me, or the one part of me or the other, but never both? Look, I've cut my 5 minutes down, so it's an easy yes or no. See, I have this sentence, and all I need to know is which word fits. I'm not asking you to read a book, a chapter, a sentence, one word, only one word. Can you please tell me which word you like better? You don't have to do a thing. I'll read it to you. All you have to do is listen and tell me like a regular outside person, not like you know me. Or we belong together. You know what I mean. Look, I'll trade you. I'll check your words if you check mine. Then I promise to leave you alone. Could you come here a minute and look at this? This is actually the name of the new collection. It's called Studies on Zone. It's a long poem, but I've kind of compressed it, worked it down. I guess the only term in here that you might not know would be actually not a proper noun called dream time, and that is a time in Aboriginal history when the world was perfect for them. It's not that I've combined dream and time, but it is a proper noun with a capital. Studies on Zone. The Aboriginals died from measles or cholera or were killed for being rambunctious. An odd word which sounds like what it means, loud and contrary. We used it for them who want to spear clouds, paint their bodies, etch them with ceremonial scars, squat all day with each other, eating roots and bark worms, yams, grubs from the hollows of trees, wattle, yellow. You know what they say in Adelaide? The Aboriginals don't want to work. They are lazy and drunk. They rip out their toilets, burn firewood in their flats. They claim sacred sites that are silly and unfounded, that planes cannot fly over, They get money to go to school. Instead, they sit 2,000 miles away and scheme into town where tourists gather, shadow into town for food the way hermit crabs steal along beaches at night. Out here, the trees do not rejuvenate after bushfires. Flames rage for days beneath the smoke. The aboriginals once cut deep slashes in their thighs, filled them with ashes, the wounds healing to a raised scar. They wait for the dream time, when the world was flat and barren, when only the gum tree existed, before words, before song, before language made memory, when nakedness was natural and only touch talked. People once thought Australia was so red it was on fire. It once was connected to New Guinea. Things floated down, seeds, fish, skulls of coconuts, driftwood thrown up by a storm, and the aboriginals. Bands of men and their families, their canoes sharp as knives. They ate people. Convicts and Jews were sent here, not just across the English Channel, but through the Mediterranean, the Suez and Red Sea, past Bahrain and Bombay, to Tasmania and Kangaroo Island, where only the Southern Ocean separates us from perishing. Camps abandoned when the land was exhausted. People died. Epidemics. Natives felt scarce. Wispy thin, entirely gone when there is no hope left. Today, we are at an outstation. There's a chain link fence, a gas pump, a shower made from cinder blocks, a low corrugated building. We are told not to look, not to stop as we pass by. Walkabouts are dangerous, like dingoes and feral cats, and need to be braced the way they hobble horses to break them of their gait. Try to talk to them, they turn away. Try to see their mountains, their caves. There are no flat walls. There are no echoes. I cannot speak something good. I cannot even speak something bad. I never once heard music. Out here, we are buried with sky. Scrub leans ancient on the sun. The clouds hang like swimmers, arms outstretched. A southern cross. And all coming at once is Dugis. But there is no race. There is no water. It is as absurd as having carpenters in a desert, with only a syllable of shade and a fugitive scent of aborigine. Out here, there is little to wander for. Rock shelters with a line drawing, a scattering of stone tools. There are no stories on their bodies or on the trunks of trees, no whirly dances, no magic to ward off leprosy, no pebbles or shells to track, no clean up the building, yes'm, no'm, no gangs, no freaks or head talkers, Negroes, not yet the blacks, they never were. They lost their plant juices and honey, they lost their hunting land, still they stray into parks and churches, still they follow stones and markings and broken twigs, an ocean never moves. I read that wrong. An ocean always moves. Sorry. This is a very different poem, and I think you'll recognize much of this. It's called Fizz. 7 days and half your rights, air, hotel, and more, your triple-wide body on our triple-decker club, direct round-trip airfare from all air and hotel taxis, all round-trip transfers, all baggage and bellman tips, sip from popular hotel beaches, a pre-holiday pink champagne package, free home delivery of hulas, or live on the rim of a volcano, only 24 cents a mile, rent a movie, waterbed, water music, rent a free glass of coconut milk upon arrival, a true Hawaiian lei greeting for your personal comfort, an upgrade to a kit of socks and toothbrush, a comb for your dining pleasure, book now to guarantee the price of a pina colada, no charge, no surcharge Mondays through Tuesdays, departures every Sunday, chocolate macadamian favors available, contest and farewell bingo guaranteed, full total price $4.99 with built-in luau, optional half-day crash, cash bar, open bar, Barbie doll, bicarb, your prescription free if we don't say thank you. Every season is a pocketbook, wallet, or purse, neon available upon request. Dive for scuba or skin, plan for paradise or your money back. And we're back to Australia again. And this is a poem, I guess, about freedom. And I guess it's really about me. And again, it's got a lot of metaphor, but I don't think it's a difficult metaphor. And it's called How Carl Evolves. It no longer matters that the British needed ranch hands at the sheep stations or cane cutters, convicts, foreigners, Indians, the indentured, whatever it took to get cheap labor. There is always seasonal work on the Atherton tablelands, sugar caning, tobacco, or fruit picking. It was cattle or dairy, immigrants, or refugees. Beneath Mesa Verde, beneath the pinyon and junipers, Pueblos lived on niches, on what could be gathered, scratched from the land, or gathered in a basket. The pollen was yellow and thick and telling. The world slips from time to time. The trees were once thick and new on the mesa, assembling the rains and brushing the skies like hair. Now, when the sun finally breaks through the fog, it sees itself among swamp gum, bone wiry trees all but dead. If they have trunks, they have no limbs. If they have arms, they have no hands. The world has gone sideways. A new mountain is a slant rhyme. From its burial to its lift, it deposits, folds, and fractures. There's always a promiscuous, defiant diagonal in a forest of verticals. The wind runs north and south. The currents bring down mud. Penal colonies at Norfolk Island and Port Arthur. Birds and wind bring seed. Plankton, unlikely debris, find their niche. They grow upward till they reach the surface. Then they lay out like a table. Pisonia trees and islands, true coral caves, the uses of debris. On this day, at the point where the moon sets and the sun rises, I know I can walk on either. When the sky and lake are one color, I know I can walk on either. When I confuse the waves and fog, I know I can walk on either. I am free enough to open a grocery. I am free enough to work or sleep out under the Southern Cross, watch the transit of Venus, or the passage of any small celestial body across a larger one. And this is again a different poem. It's called Story of the Needle, and very plain. Story of the Needle. It still had brown thread in it when she asked me to take the splinter out. The needle lay on a potholder. She had tried twice last night using glycerin, which they say brings wood to the surface of the skin. I did not know the power of glycerin. I thought I knew the power of my hands. I held a match to the needle until it glowed, and I held my fingers too close to the flame, about to go out around me and my friend, huddled over a bonfire from a garbage can under a bridge. A crystal ball, waiting for a vision, for a way to keep warm. I chipped away at the shred. I didn't mean to scatter it or tear the skin. I only wanted to return the gift of liking me, the way we do with people. We want to show we know how to be during crisis. But crises no bigger than a sliver, no wider than a smile. Even though I drew blood and only half the splinter came out along the stretch of the friendship, thin as the needle itself between two women digging at a hand. This poem is very different. I read this on the East Coast, and it was received well, but fairly calmly. Someone in Kansas City read this poem and called me and was taken quite aback. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens, I guess. It's called The Poet Does Laundry. I kneel in the deep, cloth-footed tub as if I am praying. I attach a rubber hose to the spigot and spray my hair, wash it, rinse it. I wet my face, my ears and neck before I let my groin touch the water. The water is quiet enough, clean enough, low enough, and touching the least of my body. I have gotten used to washing this way, top to bottom, out to in, the water telling me what to do, especially today when the bath water bleeds. It reminds me of that new method of delivery. The doctors say that giving birth underwater is easier, softer, better for both mother and baby, neither drowning in oceans that so muffle emotion. If I can forget becoming clean in a swamp, then I can settle the last half of my body down into the water with the scum from my hair and face, my neck and groin, all licking my thighs, mottled and veiny, which the doctor tells me are mere tributaries, nothing to worry about since he does not go naked from the thigh down. How can we be sure that what comes from us would not die, like the blood that the earth reclaims monthly? I knew a secretary once, older than me, and with sons then in college. She was proud she still bled. She made sure you knew. Still, I have been waiting for it to stop. I have been asking for years which peculiarity is the first sign, a hair grown from the mole on my chin or the staining in between, the tremblings of an old volcano. The doctor says those fibroids will do it every time. They'll keep coming back so long as I menstruate. You'll know. Your womb won't shed all of itself. Once you stop bleeding, you won't know. Those tumors will hang like pictures on walls I will never see. I'll never understand. I'm helpless to control. This morning I lay on a hotel bed, not knowing why I still bleed, with a vehemence that blackens like a bruise. My silt will not use up as fast as it is brought down, so it tumbles over and around itself, rivers, initiating new geological cycles, flowing in wide loops and bends and forming rapids. I roll on my side. I must get up soon because before the blood explodes back through any kind of cotton napkin or tampon, through my pants and nightgown, I scrub the clothing and hang them on the headboard. I strip the bed, soak the sheet and the mattress cover, dip them into bleach, stewing, boiling, rubbing, watching the Rorschachs fade into pink mountain rims. I feel as if I am caught stealing bread, spilling coffee and covering the mistake with newspaper. It is bad manners to bleed. Things some women don't know how to explain to housekeepers who share in the process, but who want me to dispose of it in small, neat bags, who don't want me to leave a trace because no one should have to clean up anyone else's afterbirth. So inexorable, so incomplete, that in the time remaining, I miss the babies that I will never bear. And this is another stretch. And it's about a circle. And that's all it is. And it's an extended metaphor, really a definition, extended definition. It's called The Privilege of Form. The world theorized the circle, the perfection of things embraced, their eternal return. Colosseums copied the cosmic order. The monks moralized the honesty of round. Rulers and their courts settled in palaces and came to climb the circular stairs, a reminder of the privilege of form. Beauty came to terms with utility. Wheels and cylinders, the best thing about them, they rolled. Water is circular. The well from which it springs, bubbles and drops, balanced and symmetrical. The circle is closed, definitive, strong, never promiscuous or piercing, never backing people into a corner or forcing them against the ropes. When everything else barricades, a circle protects. Circles shrink to pills, to dots, to births, infinitesimal, rings that fill with fluid around the bony fetus. Tunnels are round, red is round, its flow is round. In an untidy universe, the circle cleanses. While cities edge off into tumbleweed and dust, flowers open. Nothing is unwilling to be unborn. Around our lips are echoes, not one, but one, after another, out past our cheeks, past our faces, past our arms and arcs. Millions of voices sending, turning on crystalline spheres, the seasons and their fruits, even wrapped in sky. The sun and stars surround, dancers in orbit, the spread of light is round, never ending. Warmth is round, soothing, unifying. Ballet is round, music is round. All join hands, or merely two. This is a poem that started in New York when I was cleaning the apartment of a relative who had just died. And the poem began at the incinerator. It's a very different poem. I've never really written anything quite like this. Warning. Aerosol cans or any container using air pressure must be punctured before depositing in this incinerator. Throwing carpet sweepings containing naphthalene, camphor, or any other flammable or highly combustible substance into this incinerator is unlawful. Depositing paint cans, floor scrapings, oily rags, her gold compact, cigarette holder, or her Rumba, Roseland, or Xavier Cugart maracas into the incinerator, or her upsweep mouton hat and wigs, or her sweater from Hong Kong sequined with palm trees, or her Lewitt, Victrola, Brownie Hawkeye, photos and love letters into the incinerator, or her headaches, or chills, or blackouts, or her x-rays, CAT scans, intravenous, or her flexible straws, walker, bedpan, bone and bandage, or her pills, her pain, surgery and sutures into the incinerator, or her hollowed eyes, her chalky skin and hair, or her morphine, delirium, barest breath, headstone, footstone, bois fuse, set between, or the ground cover, prayer pebbles and unveiling, or ashes from traffic and tears, dung and dust, into this incinerator is unlawful. Failure to comply with federal air standards subjects the patient to penalties or death. I know, you don't know really whether to laugh or not. I hear that. Have another poem. This again is the only one I've written, and it is in mainland China that I had occasion to be a little bit in a couple of years ago, and it's about that visit. It's called The Village of Tong. Above my door is a mirror to ward off evil spirits. Red paper hangs at the side. Red is lucky, yellow is money, green is life. The family Tong sits on the floor of a cement bungalow in a village named for them. I am in a diorama that the museum guard has lit and allowed me to walk through. From the cotton rope rug, I have green fringed tape lampshades, a formica kitchen table, and plastic placemats and bowls. Small squares in the wall make windows, but they are not easy to see out of. I watch something on television weave nets that keep out the sharks and catch oysters for eating. pigskin dries on a line. There are ducks and chickens. There are polite stares. Life is full of numbers. The rice paddies give 2 crops a year. 2 is easy. 8 means good fortune. 28 means that it is easy to get rich. But 2828 means easy come, easy go. 88 means very rich. But no one gets very rich when there are only 20 grains of rice to a stalk, which someone is burning somewhere for fertilizer. 3 is for life. 9 is long-lasting. 800 million farmers whose average age is 22 and whose government wants late marriages and only one child. The special economic zones get special engineers and sell 4 special things, bikes, toys, textiles, and firecrackers. Bamboo is only temporary. 4 means death. The Chinese officer pretends not to see me, watching him watch some people trying to escape through Macau. They swim until they are brought back or shot. I hear someone say that when we look at the Chinese, the way they live, it isn't divided up right. This poem is, in the Middle East, and it's a female poem, and the word you need to know if you don't is jalabi, which is a long cloak that both males and females wear, and a word that I learned that I'd not known about, and the name of the poem is purda, which is the Muslim practice of secluding and veiling women. In the market, they sew at my feet. Quick, quiet chain stitches. They resemble the cotton that wraps them, holding a corner of their veil in their mouths. There is a secret smoothness to this fabric, never undermined by trauma or joy. Earthenware never uncoiled to chaos. The only things plentiful are the heat, the paraplegics, a crawling poor box, the blindfolded water buffalo, sycamore canes for the fetid cripple, eye disease as fertile as Nile mud. Some boys earn money by twirling thread against their knees into braid that trims the jalabi and traps water in pools, jars, underground tunnels. Morning haze hanging heavy like carpets of goat hair and wool. The way a woman is treated, sacred they say, and cannot be tampered with. The baby, chewing sugar cane, cries on her shoulder. Still the tears my head hears are hers. In Ouija, the women do not wear jalaba. They cloud themselves in white, hakes they call them, exposing nothing but one arable eye. Silence is hollowed out for them, goat skin over a drum. In some cities, deep henna decorates their hands, feet, face. Still they make mosques of their bodies. And what of their minds, untraveled from themselves? How the sun heals, but they are not in it. In the poorer places, public fountains are used for bathing, for drinking, for donkeys, for praying. The desert is a basket incompetent for water and wheat, where even the brush rejects what water is left. Out on the rift, Berber women wash clothes with their feet. Out on the rift, veils protect them from wind, from snakes and insects, protect them from questions that cover me like a sandstorm. Where are your arms that play like the sky like trees? Where are your coils of hair, your rings, silver and copper coins wound round your head and clapping like the water sellers? Where is your circle dance undulating like a smile? Where are your legs that sway like reeds of the palm? Where is the twill of your skin? Where are your August floods? Where is your sunrise that so fades and drains away? This is the next to last one. It's a very short poem, and it is a poem that I think comes from doing a performance and saying thank you afterward. It's called Chance Music. Thank you for coming. I am pleased you are pleased. It is nice to know. I don't think we've met. I'm glad. Thank you for listening, for seeking me out, for knowing. It feels. I do what I do. Your face is familiar. Your name is. I didn't put the two. I try to be. Good meeting you. I say that because. Does that make sense? Yes, you can get it here or there. It's hard to say. I appreciate your interest. I'm flattered that you chose to come and tell me. Nice to see so many. It's good to be here. I'm old-fashioned. There are lots of good. It's nice of you to stay and listen and take the time and trouble. It's wonderful to see. Thank you for enjoying. Is that the right word? For understanding. The subject's ordinary. You might even say, it is good to know. I appreciate your going out of your way to be here, to hear me. I don't quite know what. I am a little. Do come again. I am honored that it is delightful. This last poem is, it's a poem about, again, freedoms. And it's called Vital Statistics. And it's about a secretary and her boss. His cover letter read, "Dear Personnel Director, I have been promoted on every job. Hiring me is as right as rain." Now that's a man for you. Because no woman would ever be promoted with a swagger in her mouth, rings on the side of her nose. You couldn't promote a woman unless she wore a blazer and a string tie. Now that's a woman for you. Feminine, but not quite. Jewish, but not Joan Rivers. Black, but not Sean Gay. And you don't talk, and you don't ask for raises, and you mind your own business, girl, because you're here to work for the rest of us, the best of us. So I said, "Dear Father Superior, I would like returned to my office the phone that was removed without permission or warning the day I was sick. I would like returned my bulletin board that was taken when you moved my room to the back and scribbled all over my pride and we ran out of good feelings and it disappeared along with my stampede and my self-respect. And while I'm thinking of it, I want back my typewriter that you so cannily borrowed every few days to remind me that I still work for you and everything here is yours. And the civil rights purchased for me 4 years ago when you liked me better because I was tentative and nondescript. I'll have back my secretary, whom you confiscated when you prayed I wouldn't last, and my achievements, which you annexed for yourself. I'll keep my own achievements, thank you. I'll take back my dignity, whole and unharmed, and my bonus that you appropriated for your secretaries to break and enter my office, rifle through my desk and my morals, my tried and my true, to see if I'd left any of it laying around, along with my checkbook and my accounts receivable, and you ain't heard nothing yet. I'm going to march you into the VPs and tell them that you lie, you thief. Not only have you stolen my name, repossessed my title, and shanghaied my space, you have picked my pockets, rigged the deck, and walked off with my words. And when I'm through with you, we're going to trade places. And I'll have the 4 phones, 3 secretaries, 2 office boys, kitchen privileges, conference calling, windows drapes, and you're more bang for the buck. And don't make fists at me in your pockets, because if you keep messing with me, you're going to find yourself in a poem." Thank you.